Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. When you poured your coffee this morning, you probably didn't think to yourself, hey, I have to adjust how I'm thinking about and addressing risk. Probably not, but the pandemic has us doing that all the time now, whether it's masks, vaccines, even whether to attend an indoor family meal. Well, retired General Stanley McChrystal thinks about risk all the time, too. He served as commander of International Security Assistant Forces in Afghanistan from 2009 to 2010, where risk assessment and response became a way of life. Now, McChrystal has a new book out that argues that we are our own worst enemies when it comes to assessing risk and responding to it. But the good news is we can do better. And interestingly, especially to us, one of the case studies he drew lessons from was Boston and our own COVID-19 response. The book is Risk, A User's Guide. Stanley McChrystal is a retired four-star general in the U.S. Army and is a senior fellow at Yale University's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs. He joins us on the line now. General McChrystal, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you, General. There is a lot we want to talk to you about. I want to put a stake in the ground that before we let you go, given your extensive experience, I am going to want to get your sort of take on the withdrawal from Afghanistan back in August. But I want to start with risk and this new book. You use Boston and Mayor Marty Walsh's early response on the COVID-19 pandemic as a case study in the book. Let's do the same here. What did Mayor Walsh and the city get right about risk in those early days of the pandemic?
Well, it's an interesting story, and essentially what happened is as COVID-19 started to appear, I think all of us were uncertain as to what it was, how it would manifest itself as a threat to all of us. We all knew the term pandemic, but we really didn't understand much more than that. Mayor Walsh watched what was happening earlier in New York City, and then he had a fateful meeting with a friend in Boston, and in that meeting, he came away realizing that suddenly this was going to be a great big deal. But what do you do about it? You're not a medical guy yourself. You're not a public health expert. What he did first was he went to talk to some other people who could inform him more. And then he knew that he was going to have to lead the city in a different way. And what he was going to have to do was make decisions in a decisive way before information was open to everybody, meaning you have to make decisions in the face of a pandemic before the exponential growth is clear to everyone. That's what makes leadership hard in that environment. He also knew that he was going to have to bring together his traditional leadership of the city, the people who work for the city, but also a lot of non-traditional stakeholders. He needed to have streamlined, interconnected communication that operated faster than ever. And so he set up something called a crisis response forum. And led by his chief of staff, Catherine Burton, what they did is every morning at 8 o'clock, they convened a virtual call of all these different people in whose hands the fate of Boston really rested. And when we talk about the fate of Boston, we're not just talking about a business or something. We're talking about that at-risk part of the population, the single widows, the young children, everybody who in some way relies upon the delivery of food, the opening of shelters, schools, and whatnot. And he started to bring them into constant real-time coordination. And of course, what made it hard, they couldn't get in a gym and do it easily.
No.
They had to do it with teenagers leaning over their shoulders, teaching them how to use Zoom. And he focused on outcomes. He said, we've got to deal with this problem in real time, and we've got to focus on outcomes. And at the end of each meeting, he would say, now let's kick some butt today.
So, General, I'm the meeting that you talked about, that first meeting that Marty Walsh had, was with Eric Rosengren, the head of the Boston Federal Reserve Bank, who wouldn't shake his hand, which took him aback. And I want to bring that up because you're laying out a lot of really important leadership steps. But Mayor Walsh, early on, like many, also had to be brought to an understanding of the gravity of the situation. I mean, you talk about the Biogen conference in the book as well and its impact on spread. That happened in Boston too. You know, as you point out, some countries were kind of already going hardcore on contact tracing, preparing for lockdowns. And we were still attending conferences, going to dinners, you know, in hotels and restaurants. So what other things like Rosengren did it take to make Mayor Walsh or other leaders say, whoa?
Well, it's interesting because you're right. He goes to see Eric, who refuses to shake his hand, even though they know each other well. And so that makes a big impression on Marty. And of course, you got to know Mayor Walsh, the kind of person he is. He's a union organizer turned politician, deals very well with people. And to suddenly have a different, awkward interaction made him stop and go, wait a minute, I got to pay attention. And then also remember that this was 6 years into Mayor Walsh's time as mayor, and he'd been through the big snow crisis in 2015, where he'd had to make really difficult decisions. So he had a frame of reference that said, there are times when you've got to be decisive, maybe make unpopular decisions and start moving. And you've got to bring your team, meaning your entire city, along with you, even though it may be unpopular at first. And so as he worked to do that, he understood that he had to communicate internally with this group, but he also had to communicate with the city. He had to tell people, all of the people who were involved in this, what the danger was and what we needed to do to deal with it.
So I want to stay on communication in general. You talk a lot about it in the book, and you can imagine it is near and dear to my heart. And as I was reading the Boston chapter, one of my vivid memories from the early days of the pandemic was actually covering Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's daily press briefings. Mayor Walsh also did these regular press avails. How much of the focus on communication, when we get this right, General, is about frequency and transparency, and how much is about the actual message, or, you know, the term you use in the book often is narrative?
Yeah, I think they are all together. I think the most important first is transparency, and I'm going to use the term honesty. You've got to be clear and tell people what you actually know and admit what we don't yet know, because in the long term, that's what determines your credibility with people as a communicator. I think the second is communication's got to be frequent, but that's less important than the fact that the communication's got to be as right as you can make it. And so the ability to communicate in a changing environment in which people are uncertain and in many cases frightened is key. And leaders have to remember they aren't in control of communications. They are competing with 1,000 other sources of information. Media, social media, people in the neighborhood, many of which are flawed. And so you've got to create communication with a strong narrative that is so clear and so powerful that it can compete with all this disinformation that often corrupts what people think about something.
Stay with that for a minute, General. Misinformation and disinformation. You talk about it some in the book. You've talked about it a lot in some other interviews. And given, you know, honesty as a core focus of communication, how hard is it for us as bodies of people, right, that make up organizations, we make up communities, we make up civic associations, to do what we need to do and respond to crisis, respond to risk, mitigate, if we are bathing in misinformation?
Well, it's extraordinarily hard, and I think it is maybe the greatest risk facing our society today. We have got suddenly this information technology miracle in our hands, and we haven't matured yet enough as a society on how to use it. And what I mean by that is we can all communicate faster than we can think, and we can do that, and we do that often. And then I would also say that just because you are an effective communicator doesn't mean you are honest and with good intentions. So people who are trying to create a very negative or skewed outcome can use exactly the same tools that someone with very good intentions has. So you get no points for being the better person on the higher ground. You've got to compete with that. And so I think we've got a crisis of misinformation, which I call things which are probably unintentionally incorrect, and disinformation, yeah, which is intentional lies and corruption. And I think those two things together really threaten the fabric of our democracy.
We are talking with retired four-star general from the U.S. Army, Stanley McChrystal. He is co-author with Anna Botrico of the new book, Risk: A User's Guide. General, there are a couple of other subjects. I mean, there are many subjects I'd like to get to with you, but we have time for a couple of others. And I am going to ask you a question that might be a little bit uncomfortable now, General, but it has to do with the lessons in this book. Your tenure in Afghanistan ended after a Rolling Stone article cited mocking comments that you and others in your staff made about civilian government officials. That included then Vice President Joe Biden. You apologized and you eventually resigned. And I wanted to ask you this. I wondered about this as I was reading through the book. Are there lessons about risk and communication, honesty, transparency from that experience that are reflected in this book?
Yeah, I think they are, probably not directly, because I covered that instance in my memoirs, but I can describe it for people who don't remember that. That was, at least in my life, that was an explosion when that story came out and ended my career. I didn't think that the story was accurate or fair. But in the moment, I was able to understand that didn't really matter. What mattered was, here I am, a military commander, and I have essentially caused a problem to be set upon my commander, the commander-in-chief, the president's desk. And that's not something that I should do. So I'm responsible for it. And so the first thing you do is accept that responsibility, which I did. I went, met with President Obama and offered to resign. He accepted my resignation. The second question you got to make is, what are you going to do about it? You know, I felt in my heart, and I'm probably natural to feel this way, that I had been wronged. But I also know that people didn't care. Most people wouldn't know that and wouldn't care. And if I wanted to be the aggrieved party, I could be a bitter old general for the rest of my life, and a certain number of people would take me out to lunch to hear that story. But the reality was, there's no point. Again, people don't care. What I had to decide to do in that moment was to live facing forward, to say, okay, that incident happened for which I was responsible. But what I can do from that moment forward is try to do the best I can in everything I do so that everyone who meets me, who also hears that story, goes, wow, I wonder about that, because the two don't seem congruent. And I would tell your listeners, almost everybody in your life is going to stumble. You're going to have a problem with a child, or you're going to have a failed marriage, or you're going to have a failed business, or you're going to do something wrong. You may end up in jail. Whatever it is, it happens. And it's going to first and foremost test you in the moment, but then it's going to let you decide who you're going to be after that. And that ability to decide is a gift. It's a gift from, you know, wherever, that we have to grab and then decide that every day going forward, empowered with that, hopefully, wisdom, I'm going to do as well as I can.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer, General. You talked about facing forward, so let's face forward a minute now to Afghanistan today. Our longest military engagement, it ended over the summer in the dramatic collapse of the government there. We had a hasty withdrawal. Using the lens of your book, and we have just a couple minutes left, what did the U.S. leadership, President Biden, miscalculate about risk and vulnerability in that action?
I think this is separate from the decision whether or not to stay there. We're talking about how you extract now. I think they did a risk analysis, and they said that the best way to minimize risk was to move American forces out quickly to give any threats a limited window in which to attack them if they wanted to. The Taliban had agreed not to attack, but ISIS and al-Qaeda had every reason to want to try to hit the Americans going out. So I think the decision was based on that. I think it was probably a reasonable calculation that the Taliban would not be able to collapse the Afghan government as fast as they did, but there was a possibility, and that's what happened. I mean, there's a certain amount of fate in anything, and I think they just calculated that one and it came out wrong, and so it looked really messy and it was painful. I'm not saying it had to be that way, but sometimes it is, and I think that they did a pretty good job of picking up the pieces once they got caught a bit flat-footed there at the airport in Kabul.
So, General, I'm mindful. I have time for like a one-sentence answer from you on this. One thing individuals could take from your book to practice in their own lives.
You own it. You're not a victim. You have the authority and the ability and the responsibility to make yourself stronger.
That is Stanley McChrystal, a retired four-star general in the U.S. Army, served as commander of the International Security Assistance Forces in Afghanistan from 2009 to 2010. General McChrystal is a senior fellow at Yale University's Jackson Institute of Global Affairs. The book, along with Anna Butrico, is Risk, A User's Guide. General, so informative. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Boston.
It was my honor. Thank you.
Appreciate it.